Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today on the show, I talk with illustrator Jared Moriyama. If you aren't familiar with Jared, he's done a ton of work for companies like Facebook, Nickelodeon, Mattel, and Hasbro. He's probably best known to the design world for his kawaii-style illustrations and creating Hipster Mickey for Disney's Wonderground Gallery. We sit down and talk about his career path, the process of working with Disney, doing side projects just for himself, and much more, all right after this. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. Head over to creativesouth.com and get your tickets now for the greatest conference this side of the Mississippi. Plus, keep listening to the podcast for more exclusive news on CS17 speakers, events, and workshops coming soon. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Jared, thank you for joining me this evening.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you inviting me to be on the show.
You're welcome. And thank you again for being able to be flexible on the scheduling.
Oh, no problem. I know things come up.
Yeah. So, I generally start off, where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Jose, California. So Silicon Valley.
Okay.
So that's where I'm from originally. I'm currently in Sacramento. So not too far, about 2 hours away from San Jose. But a whole lot cheaper than trying to live in that area and be an artist. So huge difference.
Yeah, especially nowadays.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So growing up there, were you at all influenced by the tech world?
That came so much later. Like the Silicon Valley thing didn't happen until I think I was in college around that time or so.
Okay.
But that sort of hit right afterwards, which, so growing up, not so much, but then at that pivotal time when you're leaving college and looking for work, it was a great time to have that in your backyard.
Okay. I was about to say, I think we're about the same age. So
Yeah.
So, Apple was about the only thing in the area at the time.
Right.
And then stuff started sprouting up about 15 years ago.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So were you kind of an arty kid growing up, or did you have the, you know, All-American baseball, Little League, you know, didn't think about art until high school?
No, I mean, I did draw as a kid. I think everybody grows up drawing to a certain degree. It's just sort of a matter of who sticks with it beyond a certain age. My family, though, for the most part, I have an older brother and a younger sister, and they were big on sports. And my dad was big on sports. So they sort of dominated, they dominated with all those, you know, sports leagues throughout the years. And I was just sort of left to draw. So, and I happy to do that. But I was the one that didn't play sports.
Were you like me and also the one without the athletic talent? So,
yeah, I mean, mainly just not interested. It's kind of like drawing. I think, you know, everybody grows up playing sports and doing that thing to a certain degree, but then it becomes more serious and then I'm no longer interested. So yeah, I did not do teams or high school sports or anything like that.
Yeah, I was very much the same way. I wasn't good. I was the kid in Little League who always got stuck out in right field and, you know, was happy to, you know, look at the inside of my glove and chase butterflies.
Sure. Yeah.
Then I quickly, I was always drawing too.
Yeah.
So you go through school and then you went to, was it San Jose State?
Yeah, that's where I went for. I went to a junior college before and took some general classes and got that out of the way. And I was able to take a lot of
that.
Yeah, but I was able to take a lot of art classes there too. I think it's always, you know, it's always a big decision when you decide to actually go into the visual arts as a profession. So junior college for me was a nice way to sort of ease into it and sort of start doing art with other grownups and seeing if this is going to be a good fit. And, you know, can you cut it? Are you as good as you think you are? Or sort of just figuring out your place. So I did go to De Anza College first and then transferred to San Jose State, where I eventually got my degree.
So when you were going to school, were you a graphic design major, illustration, painting? Or so did you kind of dabble around with all of it?
Well, at San Jose State, if I can remember this correctly, everyone enters into like a sort of, at first, I think you're a general art major, and then you specialize in graphic design. And from graphic design, you apply to be accepted into the illustration program.
Okay.
And I think, gosh, I can't even remember if my degree says graphic design with an emphasis in illustration or something like that. But yeah, so we took everything. You know, you got a general art background first,
sure.
Then you took graphic design courses, and then did the illustration program.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a very distinctive style now.
Mm-hmm.
Did that start developing when you were in college? Or is that just kind of morphed into what you work on now and you kind of built around, you know, that?
It's one of those weird things where I think that style has always been sort of a part of me, based on kind of the things that I was drawn to visually, both as a kid and then later on as an adult. I don't think I started really developing that style until more recently, but I think it was kind of always there. So, you know, when I was going to school in the 90s and stuff, it was kind of a darker time for illustration.
Sure.
The style was pretty dark stuff, and that's kind of what they were pushing us to do. So they kind of frowned on some of the, you know, the cuter stuff or the more cartoony stuff. And since it was an illustration program and not specifically an animation program, there wasn't sort of a good spot for me to sort of develop that style. So it took a long time for me to get comfortable with what I do, how I do it, and then to start developing that style sort of with any kind of confidence.
Sure. So when you were going, since you said it wasn't specifically an animation track, were you hoping to get into more of the animation realm when you were going?
Yeah, I think so when I first started thinking about going into a career in the visual arts, I think like a lot of people around my age, animation was kind of the first thought.
Sure.
I was totally influenced by seeing The Little Mermaid and just how that affected me. And it was something really different and it got me excited about animation. And so that's what I thought I wanted to do. So that's kind of where I started. And like I said, at junior college, I was able to take some animation courses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I found out that I hated doing animation. Found that out quickly. So that's when I decided to start looking into illustration programs or things where I can just focus on the single image as opposed to trying to draw these things over and over and over again.
Sure. Yeah. I even drawing flip books as a kid, I realized quickly that I did not want to do animation.
Yeah.
Watching animation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Me
Completely
too.
Respect and, it.
I could do a flip book once or twice, but like, you know, after the 30th time of drawing the same thing, you just can't keep it up anymore. So yeah, it's a very different approach, a different mindset to creating, I think, that I just wasn't well suited for.
Yeah. Well, and especially at that time, there was no keyframe sequencing that you could do in the computer. You're still having to do it all by hand and things
right,
like that.
Yeah. We did even at San Jose State, when I was finishing, just before I graduated, they added a animation program onto mm-hmm. the illustration program in hopes of getting students more work. And this is sort of at the time and, you know, Pixar starting to come out. We're starting to see more computer generated stuff coming out. And, but everything we learned there was paper and pencil, drawing on those animation boards with that huge paper and punching the holes and, you know, doing the camera work one frame at a time. It was great to learn it. I'm happy that I've had that experience, but I couldn't do it.
You're also happy not pursuing that experience.
yeah, definitely had my share of it, and that was it.
Gotcha. So when you get out of college, what do you end? Or yeah, when you get out of college, what do you end up doing?
So right out of college, I went to work for an educational software company.
Okay.
And that was a sort of a good fit. Like, you know, it was doing graphics for these kids programs and, you know, whatever they need for whatever the particular subject matter was, whether it was reading and math and just drawing, you know, 12 apples and cats and dogs and kids doing things. So I did that for a long time and then eventually became an art director with that company.
Okay.
So I was lucky. Like I got something sort of right out of college. Mm-hmm. My parents didn't have to worry or stress for too long. I was actually a working artist right away.
That's always a good thing. I thankfully right out of college. Now, granted, it was the highfalutin lifestyle of a production artist for a printing company.
Sure.
But I got a job right out of college and making pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
But I mean, it worked out well. I met my wife there. So.
Yeah. Well, you got to start somewhere. And I think if you're getting paid for it, then you're being successful.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's nice. I proved very quickly to my parents that being an art major was not a horrible decision.
Yeah.
Not the best decision, as I work for an engineering firm now. And I see how much more they make than I do. But
oh, yeah.
But I do like what I do a lot. So.
Yeah. And that's important.
And a lot less math. So,
yeah.
Even more important. So you go into work for this educational software company. Mm-hmm. And how long do you stay with them?
Gosh, maybe about 3 years in total. It felt like a lot longer, not because it was a bad job or anything. It just, I think it was that time period. When I look back, it seems like I was there for a lot longer. Yeah, so right at the end of it there, the economy started to turn and a lot of us started kind of looking around to make sure, you know, could we find another job and things like that. And eventually our company did, they were acquired by somebody else, but then eventually they closed down offices. So I was laid off at the end of that. And that's really what sort of forced me into freelance.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the time where you were kind of forced into freelance, were you forced full time into it, or were you just, you know, saw the signs, you know, flashing big and knew that there might be an end in sight, so you started picking up things? Or?
So it was funny the way it happened. I mean, it wasn't funny. I shouldn't say that. Like a lot of people lost their jobs.
It was fun getting fired. It was just hilarious.
You know, and it was an old company, so there were people that had been there for a long time. And
sure.
The project I happened to be working on was one that they were going to actually see through. It was going to be the last thing we did before we literally closed the doors on the buildings. So I was there till the very literally bitter end, until it was two of us coming into this huge office building just to sort of wrap up this project. I was busy right up until the end, and then you're sort of shell-shocked when you come out of
sure.
it. So, you know, you kind of look around and then you don't find anything right away. So you kind of start panicking. And
yeah, but, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Too many times to count.
And it doesn't take very long, you know, no. Like if you don't find anything after a couple of weeks, you start kind of questioning a lot of things. So I started doing contracts, within the industry still. So I would go to other educational software companies and they would hire me to come on for some projects. And so it was like long-term projects at first. And then I'd be slowly picking up freelance projects on the side and do those at night. Yeah. So it was kind of a gradual move towards full-time freelance.
Okay. So, you know, you're picking up stuff that's still within the industry that you work with. At what point did you start branching out?
So at first you take
whatever you can get.
Take everything you can, right? You need money, and that was the focus. And so you take every crappy job that comes your way, and you just have to work through it because you need money coming in. And you know, as anyone who's done freelance knows, there's a lag time between when you're doing the work and when the money actually gets delivered to you. So you've really got to be ahead of the game and trying to have that money timed. And you know, that becomes your sort of emphasis.
Net 60 if you're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my focus, was just having money coming in so that I can pay the bills and things like that. So, yeah, I took absolutely everything I could, whether that was, you know, a lot of little mom and pop shops that want labels for things or a sign or something for their website and things like that. It was terrible work, but you just did it. And it was sort of like boot camp for doing freelance. You know, you learned very quickly how to deal with all types of different people and all types of different projects.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, you know, at what point do you start getting into the more creative ventures? Like, you know, you've done a ton of work with Disney. You've worked with Nickelodeon and Facebook and things like this. At what point do you kind of strike out and... I guess what you're best known for is a lot of the Disney work. So let's focus on that for a bit. Of, you know, how do you get in with them?
Right. So, you know, it was always a dream of mine to work for Disney in some faction. Once the thought of doing animation left, it was a little bit blurrier as to where or how that dream would come true. Whether that was merchandise or publishing or whatever, you don't hear about that side of Disney as much as you do animation. So it was a little bit of a mystery as to what the next step should be for that. I didn't apply for jobs at Disney or, you know, I would take a look at the listings and stuff, but everything seems so either out of my league or I didn't quite understand what they were looking for. And you kind of always feel like, oh, I won't be able to get that job and things like that. So
I know that feeling well too.
Yeah. I think everybody does. I think everyone does, especially when you're starting out.
I still go through it.
Oh yeah. No, I think that insecurity never goes away. And part of me thinks that's good, right? Like, the minute you get too sure of yourself is when things start collapsing. It's the universe has a way of telling you you're wrong. Yeah. So, I think the main thing that changed it for me was I just really started doing the type of work that I wanted to do. I didn't wait for it to be a job. I didn't wait for someone to ask me to do it. When I finished my contract jobs, I would just do my own stuff on the side and at night. And I made sure I made time for that because it's ridiculous to think that someone's just going to come ask you to do this stuff without seeing any of this stuff. So I just put a lot of emphasis on my like fan art and just drawing the characters the way I wanted to draw them, drawing in a cute style, developing that style and you know, putting it online so that I could get it out there and sort of gauge a reaction from the public. So that's kind of how I started doing that. And then I did a Toy Story piece a long time ago. I did a really like cutesy version of Woody and Buzz.
The kind of kawaii style?
Yeah. The dot eyes and the big head and things like that. And that got noticed by Lee Unkrich, the director of Toy Story 3. He contacted me out of the blue and said, we'd like to use this on t-shirts at the store. Can we do that? And I'm like, absolutely. And so that kind of helped me get started. Like that jumped me over, I think, a lot of time as far as trying to get noticed by Disney. And after that, I started getting calls from different divisions of Disney, consumer products and things like that, asking about it and just asking if I could develop other things with the characters in a similar style. So it was that quick. It didn't feel quick at the time, but it was, when I tell it like this, it was that easy.
Okay. So how does that work? Because you are drawing a Disney-owned property
right
for yourself, and then they're asking to license it from you.
Right. Well,
what weird quagmire is that?
It seems to me like it's the way of the future now, right? Like because of the internet, because of all these different ways to post work and get it out there, these things sort of exist, and there's not much the companies can do, right? I mean, I wasn't selling the thing; I was just posting it on my websites and things like that. So that's a big difference, right, between selling somebody else's characters and sort of just posting it for your own fun. Mm-hmm. But in the case of those shirts, you know, there's no question I don't own these characters. I own just sort of the image that I created, but it's not even a licensing thing. It's just they sort of buy it from you, basically.
Sure.
And so obviously at that time, I'm more than happy to, whatever you want to give me, I'll take it.
Yeah.
If you're going to use this on merchandise, I just want to see that merchandise. So
thank you for not suing me for using your property.
Right. Absolutely.
So you know, that's kind of how you get your in, but you've really managed to, from what it seems like, keep a long-term relationship with them. And like you said, you've been working with multiple divisions and multiple Disney properties and things like that. How does, you know, Disney's a big enough company as it is. How is it managing all of that stuff on your end?
Well, you know, it's, yeah, Disney is huge, and you kind of sometimes forget that it is this big sort of multifaceted company with all these different divisions, but that just sort of means that there's a lot of opportunities within that company. I've been lucky that my work has been well received, however you want to define that, and that they have taken notice and that they have wanted to use it in other parts of the company. And other divisions, which has been, you know, it's been a blessing. Like I am so grateful for the different opportunities that came. Certainly doing stuff for Wonderground Gallery and doing the hipster Mickey stuff certainly went a long way to sort of further people's awareness of me and my work. And yeah, so I don't know, you just kind of keep moving forward and just kind of doing what feels right. And then, you know, as far as the other stuff on Disney's end, they pretty much take care of that. Like, that's the great thing about being freelance is I don't have to go to meetings. I don't have to be, you know,
well, yeah,
be involved. They just come to me, tell me what they need, and then just fulfill the order. So, yeah.
Well, so you mentioned Hipster Mickey, and that's, I think, probably one of the things that you're best known for, or at least is the most easily recognizable as something that you've done. How did that come about? Was that a, you know, they were looking for something specific and, you know, told you that? Or was it you were just playing around with different ideas and...
Yeah. Yeah, it was mainly... So when the Wonderground was getting started, they contacted a bunch of artists out of the blue. You know, I had no idea what the gallery was, or had never heard of the concept being developed. So... you know, they approached me about doing some pieces for them. And one of the requirements for all the artists at that first show was to do a Mickey Mouse piece.
Okay.
So just do your kind of your own take on Mickey Mouse and do something interesting. And that was about it. So that was just one of the concepts that I came up with, was this sort of hipster Mickey. And I was trying to just figure out how we could dress him up in a costume that looks like now. Uh-huh. You know, what is the most sort of now of the... of the fashion that you can, you know, that's sort of recognizable and sort of costumey enough that it sort of makes an impact, but it's not too subtle where it just looks like, you know, Mickey in a t-shirt or something. So that was just one of the options we came up with, and it sat around for a while. We weren't sure if we were going to use it, and then fortunately they did, and it sort of took off, and it sort of has a life of its own now.
Sure. I think one of my favorite parts of that illustration is just that little detail on the headphones of the D in the Disney black letter. And it was one of those, you know, I'd looked at it 100 times and then I was looking at it again the other day, you know, kind of getting ready for our talk. And I was like, how have I never noticed that? That is, that little detail was nice.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a lot of the fun of illustrating, especially with Disney, so the history. And such a, you know, there's so much with Disney you can play with, and especially with Mickey Mouse, he's sort of a blank canvas at this point. So it's kind of fun to sort of use him, you know, in that way and do some different things with him, because everyone, you know, he's so recognizable around the world that you can do quite a bit with him and people still recognize him. So this was just sort of a, you know, a fun approach. So yeah, that's my favorite part of doing it, though, with all the little details you can work in and stuff. Mm-hmm.
The nice long rimmed glasses that are so prevalent, and because I'm wearing them right now, all that fun stuff. So, you know, among those other things, you've had the opportunity to work with Disney's international properties as well. Is there a culture barrier, or not culture barrier, cultural translation that you have to adapt to? And do they kind of give you parameters for that? I mean, you're raised in the States, so.
Right. So when I'm working with Japan on the Tsum Tsum stuff, the main, I mean, everything's done by email. We're not even on phone calls or anything like that. There's no meetings. It's usually just a list and some reference material that they'll give me, and that's about it. However, when I get the comments back, they are very meticulous in their comments, which is great, right? And you'd expect that from Japan, I think. And so sometimes,
and correct me if I'm wrong, you're of Japanese descent, right?
Yeah, I am. I don't think I got that discipline exactly, but yeah. So sometimes the comments are difficult to read. You know, it depends on the person's level of English, and they're great. I mean, you know, they could do better with English than I could certainly do it with Japanese. So, but you know, they're very polite and respectful, and so the comments are always nice, but there are a lot of comments, and you know, after about like the 10th round of revisions, you're kind of like, you know, I could just send you the file and you can move that over, you know, a quarter inch on your own instead of having this sort of 48-hour turnaround and things like that. But I think they're very respectful about this is your work, and you know, like they want you to see it through and stuff like that. So other than that, though, they're fantastic to work with. And, you know, I was a fan of the Tsum Tsum line when it first started. So I was very excited to be able to work on that line. And when I went to Japan last year, the stuff is just everywhere. Sure. It's insane. Yeah, it's just crazy to see how much is out there.
Yeah, it very much seems like a direct evolution of all that Sanrio stuff and Hello Kitty kind of morphed into an even more compact package, all that Tsum Tsum stuff.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I was very excited to see how popular it was here in the States. Like, it makes sense in Japan, but
sure,
it was a little bit more surprising to see how much it took off here.
Oh yeah, my kids are obsessed with it.
Yeah.
So you've had the opportunity with these opportunities with Disney, and then you've had, you know, other inroads with, like we said before, Nickelodeon and Facebook. Are you going through an agent, or are you self-represented the entire time?
So far, I've been lucky enough to be self-represented. I think I'm in a specific niche where that seems to be okay. There have been a few times in negotiations where I think it would be nice to have someone else do that part of it and sort of know how far to push and, sure, you know, like, and it's someone else doing that, and then I don't have to come across as the jerk. Like, that would be fantastic in some cases. But for the most part, I've been happy doing it on my own and not having to give up that percentage. So
I don't know. I think I'd be more offended the minute I put out a price there and they came back and didn't counter offer.
Yeah.
Like, damn, should ask for more money.
Yeah, exactly. You went too low.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's the worst part of it for me. I hate the financial part of it. Like, that's always awkward, and you know, it's nice. That's kind of the nice thing about Disney, is most of the time they have a budget for these things and they can come in and tell you, here's how much we can, you know, afford to pay you for this particular thing. And that makes it easier for me.
Sure. Yeah. I can imagine. I wish they had an agent for just graphic designers to make that part easier for me. Cause that has always been my two hardest parts have been knowing where to find work, you know, just to dig it up and not go to the local mom and pop dry cleaner.
Yeah.
My buddy, the dentist down the street.
Right.
And then negotiating prices and stuff like that. Because I'm always like, am I going too high? I never know where that middle is.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of standard advice about that stuff. Like, you know, you have to know how much your time is worth and, you know, break it down by the hour and stuff like that. And that is true at a certain level. But there's a lot of trade-offs, I think, that you have to take into consideration too. You know, is it a high profile project? You know, sure, you can do something for Disney and maybe you don't get paid a whole lot of it, but more people are going to see that thing than anything else you ever do. So there's a lot of other things to sort of consider, I think, than just, you know, your time. So that's where it gets tricky, but it's hard to give advice on that because such a personal decision, I think, for everybody.
Well, and it's also such a project by project decision too.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to balance all of those factors in.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever wants to do spec work, but you're willing to take a lower price if 100 times as many people are going to see it, and that's going to get you more work on the back end from
that. Right. Yeah, that's why you just have to, I mean, it's your time, right? And I know we like to say, like, well, if you do free work, you're going to ruin it for everybody else. And that's true to a certain degree, but I'm like, everyone has to make those calls on their own. Like it's hard to just go to a book and say, here's what I'm going to charge. You know, so many other factors come into it.
Sure. So, you know, specifically when you're looking for work and trying to find clients, you know, not so much cold calling, because I imagine at this point you're getting more offers than you're having to go out and find stuff like that. But when you're having to go out and try to find stuff, how are you balancing your time and making that transition of, okay, I've got this amount of time that's devoted to the creative side of things. Mm-hmm. Now I've got to go do the not fun part of trying to dig up work and find something, find contact information for somebody and get my foot in the door. How does that work for you?
Well, the main thing for me, I think, is I don't have kids, and that's huge. I think people with kids, that changes everything, and it should. It should be a different situation for you with kids. I am, I have the luxury of doing these things when I can do it, and you know, there's very little else dictating my schedule.
Sure.
And so I can do it. You know, I can get up early and work early if I want. I can take a nap in the middle of the day. I can, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that makes all the difference in the world. I will say I am working kind of all the time. You know, when you're freelance, you take the work when you can get it because you don't know if it's going to be a slow time or, you know, and you don't even take it out of sort of desperation for work, but just that so much comes up and you have to take it and you just hustle for a month or something. And then you have maybe a slower period so you can relax a little, but you're kind of always working. You know, you get up, you work a little, maybe you go to the gym, you come home and you work, you eat dinner, you go back to work, watch a TV show.
I don't
show.
Know what this gym thing is you're talking about.
But, you know, I'm able to break up the day as I need to. So, other than the fact that I am working all the time, you know, it's just, I'm fortunate that I can do that because I realize it's a luxury to be able to work that way. So if I get tired of drawing and you need a break, I'll do the other stuff, the business stuff, or do up the invoices or send out some emails or things like that and just balance it so that I don't burn out on either one.
Sure. So do you still find time for personal projects and stuff as well?
I do. You kind of have to because, you know, I like to post stuff. I like to post stuff often. And,
sure.
But lately it's been more of a challenge because I feel guilty that, you know, okay, there's so many other things I could be working on. Personal projects seem to get pushed back further and further.
Well, it is nice to pay the bills, so.
Yeah. But, you know, like I love doing things for Wonderground Gallery and they're so great with the way they work with artists and stuff. And I have all these ideas that I've been wanting to get down and, you know, do I place that first? Is that considered personal work or is that, you know, business stuff? It's kind of a little bit of both. So it just depends. Every now and then I will get moved. Like I just have to draw something because I, you know, whether it's like, I don't know, Game of Thrones or something, you get all, you know, hyped about something and you feel like you just got to do it. So sometimes I'll make time for things like that. But, you know, it just depends. It just depends on how my schedule is looking at the time.
So when you do work with Wonderground,
uh-huh.
Is that on a commission basis or is that kind of as a freelance thing? Because I've always wondered how that structure works.
Yeah. So with Wonderground, we, you know, you come on, you're not hired or anything like that as a contractor or anything like that. You kind of do the pieces, like I'll send them the files and they take it from there pretty much. They might, like, I don't know, we used to do it where there were themes for the shows and they'd tell you like, you know, this is the theme for this particular show, or maybe they want you to use certain characters or things like that. But that hasn't really happened more recently. And to be honest, all I know is how they deal with me. I couldn't speak for everybody else. But as far as I can tell, you kind of come up with concepts on your own and propose them, and then they kind of give you the yay or nay, or fine-tune the idea a little bit. And then from there, they take it and they do with it as they will. You'll know if they're going to do like a deluxe print and a canvas and maybe a postcard, but sort of beyond that, it's up to them what they do with it and, you know, what merchandise. Like, I don't have a say in what merchandise is created with it and stuff. They might come to me and say like, oh, we're going to do a mug. Can you sort of reformat this to fit a mug or things like that? But,
well, yeah, that's kind of what I was curious about is do they, you know, so when you put something in, do they ask you to kind of change up the aspect ratios and dimensions of things to fit what they want to do with it?
If it needs to, usually they do. And it's different, I think, for each piece and each piece of merchandise. So like for the hipster Mickey doll we did, I was very involved in that and got to see, you know, the early development. I did drawings of all the different, the turns of the character, so you can see all the different sides of him and things like that. So I was very involved with that, but that's an unusually sort of intensive project. Most of it's like a mug or a shirt or something like that, where you're either just reducing the colors or, you know, taking out the background or things like that. So, yeah.
Okay. With the other clients that you've worked with, specifically like Facebook, is Facebook has a very unique style that they ask of almost all of their illustrators as of late, at least from what I've seen, is I've got a bunch of friends who have done projects with them, and it's like, I know what their normal stuff looks like and then what their Facebook stuff looks like, and everybody's Facebook stuff looks very, very similar. Do they ask that of you as well?
Well, you know, I came on there, they asked me to do the stickers, and that was sort of very early on in the sticker process for them.
Okay.
And so, gosh, you know, they were great to work with. I remember enjoying working with them. They were very open to everything and very little feedback and things like that. I'm trying to remember now how we did that. They had some suggestions. You know, I really worked with them to develop characters and stickers that they thought would be appropriate. But it was more the subject matter than it was the style or anything like that.
Sure.
They really had very little input on the style. They wanted me to do whatever I sort of wanted to do. So we developed about, six sets. I think there was one set that we actually didn't end up using, but we worked on it for quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they didn't dictate a style to me or anything, but that was a long time ago. So it could have changed since then. Sounds like it. But they were really trying to figure stickers out because they were so huge in Japan. And I guess in Japan and Asian countries, they pay for the stickers. Like, they're willing to pay for the stickers, where that doesn't seem to be the case here. Or maybe it's a more specific sticker that people, I have no idea. But I think they were trying to figure out sort of a master plan for how they would roll out stickers. So, but I haven't done those for quite a while. So it might have changed. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that, you know, they've had a bunch of stuff coming out lately that's, especially it's on site. It's not so much print material and things like that, but their on site stuff looks very similar no matter who it's coming from.
And who knows? I don't know. They could have, that just could be a new approach or something that, you know, that wasn't part of the sticker process. I will say that when I worked on the stickers, even more so than Disney to a certain extent, I've had so many people email me about trying to get stickers on Facebook. just about for a while, just about every day, people would be messaging me or texting me or asking me how I got the Facebook sticker job. So. Yeah, that has quieted down considerably, though.
Now I think if people are just creating stickers and then submitting them to Facebook and hoping to get picked up, because I've seen so many coming out lately that it's like, I mean, they could be commissioning all that stuff, but it seems like a lot of it is there's an API opening up where you can create your own.
Well, yeah, and there was, I think like a year or two ago, everybody was doing stickers. It was just sticker crazy. They just could not. I turned down so much work for stickers because it was just coming every day for, you know, they weren't paying fantastic and they want to like 50 stickers or something like that. But yeah, it's, I don't know if it's because I turned down so many jobs, but it's certainly quieted down. I don't hear about stickers quite as much these days. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I think they got oversaturated with the market and then backed off of it.
Yeah, that could be true. Yeah.
Yeah, when my mom started figuring out what they were, I knew it was oversaturated. I love you, Mom, in case you're listening. Not that she ever listens. So, you know, going forward, you've had all these balls, you know, in the air with Disney and Nickelodeon, a lot of kind of animation or companies that are known for animation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've also had the opportunity to do some work with some toy manufacturers as well. How does that change up? Are you doing like character development for actual toy lines, or are you just doing illustration comps for existing products?
A little both. A lot of times the stuff that I work on, it's always character based.
Sure.
It's, you know, right now I'm doing a lot of stuff with Disney Publishing, but the majority of my work is just character based for merchandise, whatever that is, toys, mm-hmm. clothes or whatever. And so a lot of it doesn't actually get shown. I can't show it on my own because sure. it's at those early stages. So we do a lot of, well, I do a lot of development work early on in the process. So whether that's just sort of doing explorations for, you know, like they're going to do a line of, I don't know, animal princesses or something like that. So it's not necessarily that they hired me to do it, but they're asking me to give them, you know, some concepts and things like that. So it's a lot of work like that, where it's very early on in the development period, and you know, most of it doesn't even see the light of day, and I can't even show it on my portfolio, which is unfortunate. But that tends to be where most of it is. A few of them I've been able to see through, like production and sort of you know, develop the product all the way to the end. But most of it is at the early conceptual stage. Mm-hmm. I think there's more people that can take the designs and sort of tailor it to fit whatever the toy needs are. And so they don't burden me with all of the technical aspects of it. They just kind of want the concept and the idea from
me. Yeah, so you come up with concepting of and character studies, and then they take it to an industrial designer.
Right, right. So like,
out in 3D.
Yeah, so if, you know, they won't, I don't have to work in CAD or something like that to try to, you know, figure out how the whatever the little motor is going to fit in the body. They have somebody else that can do all that. They just want me to give them sort of a style.
Okay. You
know, which is the best part. Like, that's the fun part for me. I'm glad I don't have to worry about those other things. When it gets too technical, I start sort of glazing over and checking out. So yeah, that's the fun part.
I can imagine the engineering side of it doesn't sound fun for a creative brain.
Yeah, no, I think it takes a very specific person that sort of straddles the line between the technical and the creative on that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of the stuff that you do is, I don't want to say geared towards kids, but it is, it is that, you know, kawaii style and very cutesy and things like that. Do you ever get an opportunity to kind of stretch your legs and go in more adult themed things, or
you know, every
or do
now
you
and
even
then,
enjoy that? Sorry,
it just depends. It depends on what, you know. You look at sort of what's in my portfolio and you get a sense of what I do and stuff.
Sure.
So it would be sort of strange for someone to come and ask me for something completely different. So it does tend to be sort of in the same realm. You know, nowadays, it doesn't seem like it's so much a split between kid stuff and adult stuff, right? Like, I mean,
oh yeah, those lines will cross all the
time. Oh yeah, I mean, how many adults are running around looking for Pokemons right now, right? So it doesn't matter. It just, it's like Pikachu isn't a kid's character per se anymore, or any of those things. Everything kind of crosses over now, which is great. It works perfectly for me. So I think because my stuff, while it is sort of kid friendly, it hasn't been just kids who have been attracted to the work. It has been attracted to adults, that I feel like, you know, I tend to not worry about it being like, is this a kid's project or an adult project? Like, it's all kind of runs together these days, it seems.
Yeah, all that stuff gets real blurry.
Yeah.
Well, and so my specific reason for asking that is, I was looking at your site, and you know, you got like Disney Japan, DreamWorks, Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. all this stuff, and then I see the Hollywood Reporter amongst all this. So that's why I was curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was out of the blue, and that I think that sort of sticks out in my portfolio because it is unlike they were doing sort of a parody there for the Tinkerbell image that I did for them.
Sure.
So yeah, so I think they just wanted the parody to look sort of authentic Disney, but I mean it was pretty mild, but still it was a little bit different than we might see a character as portrayed by Disney. But that was fun. That was since it was for magazine publishing, very quick. The mm-hmm. turnaround was extremely tight. Like you get it on Thursday, they want it Friday evening or something like that to make the
they
press.
They want it 2 days before they gave it.
Yeah, so that's a whole different world.
Yeah, I've had a few of those for some clients, and
I'm sure.
At this point, those are one of the few clients that I have the luxury of turning down. At this point.
Yeah,
I can't bend over backwards like that.
No, there are, but that's a whole
feel good about the work.
That's
that
a whole
I've
world
done
unto itself, doing that kind of editorial illustration, and I think that's pretty much the norm, though. You know, working at that breakneck speed, but that's certainly that's not how I work.
You've had all these opportunities with kind of a variety of things that are in a very similar industry, where it's toys, animation houses. You did the thing for Hollywood Reporter that. It was more mm-hmm. of a, parody on it. I've seen the piece. I did not read the article. So.
Right.
couldn't in good conscience do that while at work today. So at this point in your career, are there like properties that you've wanted to work with that you haven't had the opportunity yet? Or?
Sure. Yeah. There's, like I've said before, I'd love to work with the Muppets to some degree, whether that's illustrating or I don't know what that would be. There's a whole cast of characters out there that I'd love to do. Sure. Warner Brothers alone has a ton of stuff, whether that's Looney Tunes and all the Cartoon Network stuff and things like that. There's I'm trying to think if there's one specific thing. Like I love when we do these gallery shows where they feature a specific movie or a specific year in cinema or things like that. And to be able to do sort of the cutesy version of things that you wouldn't expect to be cute. Mm-hmm. That's always what I like to do. So whenever we can do a live action movie or something like that, I'm always excited about those projects, but those come up sort of rarely and they're very specific usually to the galleries that are doing them. So,
sure.
Yeah.
So, still trying to recover my train of thought.
That's okay.
I'm definitely editing this one. are there any projects that you have, that are in the works now that you can talk about? Because I know we talked before of, you've got a lot of stuff that's, mm-hmm. you can't really talk about because you're in the process
right.
of working on things and it hasn't been released yet. But is there anything exciting out there that you're allowed to talk about?
Well, I'm working with Disney Publishing on doing a line of baby books.
Sure.
And we just came out with two, I think, are on the shelf now. Another two are due out before the end of the year. But that's a much bigger line that we're working on. And that's been really exciting because I've been able to sort of create a very specific style for this line of books. And to see that style play out across a lot of different properties from Disney and Pixar and things like that. And to just create a very specific look for a huge line like this has been a real goal of mine. So I'm excited, we're in the early stages still, and I'm excited to see how that plays out and, sure. and, is it going to go beyond the books and things? I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. So that's been a very time consuming project and has been the big thing I've been working on lately, in addition to some smaller projects, but that's really been the big thing lately. And it's been a lot of fun. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
Gotcha. Do you have any upcoming gallery showings or anything like that? Because You've done some stuff for Gallery 1988, haven't you?
Yeah. Gosh, I know I do have some stuff coming up. I don't know. I'd have to even look at my calendar and see. I know I'm doing a few of their shows, I think, before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what else. I know I've got two shows, I think, with them that I'm supposed to do pieces for. Yeah, but I can't think of it. I don't know if we're supposed to even say anything yet on those or not. But yeah, I hope to be doing more with them. And then a couple of other things that should come out. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say when these things are even going to come out. I know there's a bunch of things that I'm in talks with to do, and we'll see what happens. That's like the worst, vaguest answer I could possibly give you. Yeah,
that's right. Very non-committal, non-specific. Yeah, I've gone through media training.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think. Like, I hate to, like, you know, for these for the galleries and stuff, I hate to jump the gun and not. I don't know. I always want to be respectful of what their plan is for these things and not sort of overstep and, you know, announce anything before they have the chance to, obviously. So, yeah, I should have looked into that before I started the podcast. But
well, if you think of it, we can always put it in the show notes.
Sure, sure.
Well, so, you know, aside from our little hiccup that will be edited out, no. You know, we're kind of getting close to our time. So where can people find you online?
My website is jmariyama.com. And pretty much all of my social media is based on jmariyama. That's on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And that's primarily where you can find it. But if you go to my website, you can find links to all of those things from that spot. So it's all there.
Cool. So we end every podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And I've heard it seems like everybody you have say that has a question about where that came from. I did listen to one of the episodes recently where you did explain it. So I know now where that comes from. But
awesome. So I don't have to explain it. Good.
That's right. Yeah.
I was all ready to hop into my spiel there. So would you mind taking us out?
No problem. Tell everyone. I'd like to tell everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for having me on the show. Go out and draw and go out and hug some necks.
Awesome. Thanks, Jared. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
All right.
You can find out more about Jared on Dribbble and Twitter at jmoriyama. And be sure to check out the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter at CreativeSOPod and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA. We're over at CreativeSouthGA.com. And I'm at jfrostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.